This is a Gathering Heritage project interview recorded in County Louth in Ireland.
I'm delighted to welcome David Darcy to our Gathering Heritage project. And David was born and bred down the quay, and that is the way that Dundalk people talk about the quay, just down the quay. Would I be right saying that, David?
Yeah, down the quay, no matter where you go, for some reason or other, anywhere in Dundalk, you always go down the quay. I've never heard of anyone going up the quay. You go up the town,
yeah,
but you always went down the quay, out to Fatima, over to Hill Street.
Over the bridge.
Over the bridge, over to Hill Street, but yeah, down the quay is the phrase, into town.
Now, in my opinion, that you would only go down the quay if you lived there or if you walked there, because there was nothing down the quay. Am I right saying that?
Well, I mightn't say there was nothing. You had the harbour, of course, and you had all the shoe factories that were down there. The coal yards are part of the harbour. Where else then? Because where we lived there, we had our own places down the quay. So we had the hatchery, we had the tower road, we had the big yard, and we had the old military barracks as well.
What was the hatchery?
The hatchery is... I'm assuming it was something, might have been something to do with the mill, or again, maybe it was actually like a chicken farm, for want of a better way of putting it.
Years ago.
And it was, do you know where John Short's is now, the higher place?
Yeah.
Well, before John Short's was there, it was a big old, like, warehouse type building. And it was always called the Hatchery. And I suppose if I had been thinking right, I might have sort of Googled the hatchery in Dundalk, but we'll save that for another day. Like, you could put that on as an addendum later on. But the lane, we used to sort of actually climb into the hatchery and play on all the floors and climb up all the walls and all of that. And the lane between the hatchery and the Greenough Railway Saloon, that was a great place for playing football, you know.
So still is. I see kids still playing down there.
Well, I have to say I'm delighted to see that there's kids still playing football.
Because I came round in the car and there was two kids playing there, and I had to stop the car for it if I were to pass them. Yeah. Now, where does the quay in you're a local in the quay, so right, where does it start and where does it stop? Because you have places both sides of it, but where does, in your opinion, everyone has a different opinion when it suits them, you know. So when is your, where do you think it starts?
Well, it would start at the windmill and it would end at Clark's or the cattle sales. Do you know?
Are you taking in Barrack Street in as part of the quay?
Yeah, you'd be taking in Barrack Street and High Park and St Gerard Square, St Joseph's Park. Like that'd be the quay. Yeah, it's quite a small area, but that would be where we call it.
Doug, if I said that it was one of the, and I always compare nearly it with Bridge Street, it's one of the areas in Dundalk that has never been modernised.
You know, that's true. It hasn't. There's been nothing knocked down. The odd houses and stuff like that, you know, but there's been nothing knocked down and put in its place. The only thing might be is at Rawson's factory there on Quay Street that was turned into the apartments. That's probably the only major change that was in Quay Street. Certainly since I've been there in 1960, from 60 on, so in the last 50 odd years, or 60 odd years, there's been no change in Quay Street.
Now, if anyone's listening to this, they're going to come in and they say, well, you're telling me you got that wrong because it wasn't Rawson's factory.
Oh, was that Clark's, was it? Yeah, it was a Clark's, right. See, I was too young to remember where Rawson's and Clark's were.
And it wasn't even Clark's.
Oh, go on, Jesus, where was it now?
It was Halliday's.
Halliday's, yes, it was. And the offices were right beside it. And when they moved out, we moved in.
Right, where did you live before that you went down the quay?
Oh, I always lived in Quay Street. Always lived in Quay Street. We lived, do you know where the harbour offices are in Quay Street? We lived right beside the harbour office.
You lived in very big houses down there, didn't you?
Yeah, they're great. As my mother always said, two-story over basement.
I love that. Oh, that's real posh.
Oh, yeah, real posh. Oh, two-story over basement.
And what did your dad do?
Oh, gosh. Now, let me see now. I suppose the earliest job that I can remember my father doing was that he was... I don't know whether he was a salesman or a delivery driver for Start-Rite Shoes.
Which were made in Rawson's.
Yeah. And now I'm sure he had other jobs before that. Like now, I do think that the steam packet, I have a recollection of him working in the steam packet, which would be down opposite Tom Clark's pub. There were offices down there. Whether he had something to do in the office, I don't know. But I remember going down there with him and cleaning the offices, right? And I was always fascinated because in the offices they had these model ships mounted on the wall in glass cases. But it wasn't the whole ship. It was just as if you were looking at it in an elevation. So it was only half the ship was a model with a mirror set behind it, so it looked like it was the whole ship. And I was fascinated going down looking at all these ships in the steam packet office. But I suppose the main job that I remember him doing was being driving the van for Start-Rite and going with him, delivering shoes.
Did he deliver all around the country?
All up Dublin, actually. It seemed to be like all along the East Coast up towards Dublin and going into shoe shops in Dublin and all of that. I do remember doing that.
These were children's shoes, of course, and they were one of the first that did wide fittings and narrow fittings and everything
right,
like that.
Yeah.
They took that nearly into it.
Yeah.
It's very strange that you don't know exactly what your dad did.
Well, again, that's what I remember him doing, we'll say, when I was, let's say, 8, 9, 10, 11. And then an aunt of mine, my auntie Phil, took over running the golf club, the food and the kitchens in the golf club, the restaurant. And after that, then, my father got a job working in the bar in the golf club. So I remember him doing, from Start-Rite, going to do working in the bar in the golf club. He was also then a security guard in McArdle's Coach Builders down the coast road.
Just down beside you there.
Yeah, on Coast Road. And then, of course, later on, when my auntie Phil stopped running the restaurant out in the golf club, my parents took over running the restaurant in the golf club, you know.
Yeah. So, that was a very big house for... Where were you living before you moved down to the quay?
No, we were living in Quay Street. I only ever lived in Quay Street.
But where you're
in 42 Quay Street. Yeah, I've never lived anywhere else. Now we did have my auntie Breege lived in I can't remember my mother's maiden name. Flynn, thank Janie, Mike. Right. So the Flynn, my mother was Flynn's, the Flynn's from Quay Street. Well known in Quay Street, right? They were famous, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And the family home was 46 Quay Street, which is just two doors down. That was my mother's home. And then when they got married, her and my father, we moved into 42 Quay Street. But we've never lived anywhere else. Like, everybody was there.
No, where you live, there's only, in the way I can remember it, it's a good question since I was down there, maybe five or six big houses there on this side of Halliday's factory.
Yeah.
So where did the 42 and 41 numbers come in?
Well, I would assume that if you start somewhere up towards up towards the windmill and start to go back, like years ago, there was, must have, before St. Gerard's Square was built, I would have thought that there could have been houses and properties down along there. So, look, I can't answer that question. But
Now, was Halliday's factory open when, do you remember it? So, like, that must have been something out your door and the thousands of bikes and people. What was your, looking back on it now, what was it like?
I have to say, in fairness... It was open all right. I remember all the factories being open. We used to have the ladies all did piecework. Is that the right word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
And they had, was it called the lasts? the wooden shoes, the wooden sort of templates for the shoes. Yeah. So they were always in our house. And
you mean you were storing them for them?
No, no. Working, the ladies would, they did the piecework at home.
Oh, and they had the...
They had the whatever. Now, again, look, I don't know exactly what it was that they were doing, but we had the moulds, the wooden moulds for the shoes, and obviously there was leather stretched over them, and the women did this piecework at home to earn a few extra pounds. I always remember...
That wasn't the interlacing, was it?
It could have been the interlacing. Now, like I say, I'm just not too sure what it was, but they were always at home. And we'll say, I always remember the hooters going off at 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock. Right, dinner time, end of dinner time, and everybody go home. The crowds of people up and down the street, I've seen the photographs, but can I say that I've actually seen it myself? Because I only would have been, I suppose, any memories that I have would have been from around 1965, when I was about 5 years of age. So I can't say with certainty that I've seen it.
Is it fascinating for you to look at them pictures? You can probably see your house nearly in some of the pictures that Larry O'Hagan has put up.
Yeah, you probably would have, all right, yeah. Because once you can see the Harbour Office, you can see our house, because as I said, we are right beside it.
Now, across the road, of course, the big thing down the quay was coal. Now, the stories is all great about everyone that's in the quay lifted coal in the lorries. And it's everyone down the quay. Wouldn't I tell you what my granny used to do? Did you lift coal, or were you too posh for that?
Oh, no, everybody lifted the coal. Yeah, you'd be waiting for the coal lorries to come in. And as the lorries would be piled high with the coal. And as they come out of the yard and they swing to turn right to go up the town, it all topples out. And everybody would be standing at the corner.
Did you know what time the buses were going, or the trains were going?
Oh, well, yeah. Sorry. You knew there was a coal boat in. You know, the war to go around. There's coal boat in. Now, we used to, as children, we loved it because to watch the cranes working, loading and unloading the boats. Like, it was fascinating for us. And it's funny you were talking about, like, the workers coming out of the factories. I suppose I would actually have a better recollection of the amount of workers that were on the quays, on the harbour, and in the coal yards. Because when we wanted coal, you were sent over to the coal yard with an empty sack and you got a bag of coal.
Did you just lift it off the ground?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You'd go to the coal yard.
Or into Connick's or Lockington's.
Yeah. And then funny, both of them were open at that stage. Like, it's really strange. And you go in and they had this big, we used to love it because they had a big giant hopper. One with coal, one with slack. And he'd give him the big sack, and he puts it underneath the hopper and pulls the lever and tightens it on, and the rattle and the sound of it coming down the chute into the bag.
You were there standing watching it.
Yeah, the guy does it, like, and you'd stand there watching it, and you had your bicycle or you had a pram, and it was put sort of in between the triangle of the bike where the pedals were, and you pushed it down the street, or you had an old pram or a gig. If we had our gigs, then you see, be pulling it behind you on the gig, yeah.
And you went into the office then and paid for it.
Oh, yeah, you did, yeah. You went in and there was the wee hatch, and you just said, I'm looking for a bag of coal and me mother. Me mother wants a bag of coal and a bag of slack. You know, and she fills out the wee chit and gives you the receipt, and you go to your man and he has the... He gave him the receipt and he filled the bag of coal.
And could anyone in the town do that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because of course you could, yeah.
Were we too far away in here?
I would have thought so, because, again, you know, there was the lack of cars then. Like, I would have... I remember us playing football on the road outside Quay Street, and you'd hear a car coming a mile away because there wasn't traffic going up and down the street. So it was easy for anybody down the quay to go and get a bag of coal and wheel it back to the house.
Now, when we were talking there about where does Quay Street start, where does it finish in the local?
Tom Clark's pub.
Oh, yeah. And the houses then, the Point Road starts where those rows of houses are.
Yeah, that'd be right, yeah.
So what was down the Point Road in your time?
Oh, right, down the Point Road is almost a country. When you get as far as the Navi Bank, the start of the Navi Bank, now where the Sean O'Mahony's pitch is now, that was just all hill, like sort of little hillocks and grass, wild grass. And to us, that was the country. The Red Barns Road was the tiniest narrow track. And that was basically the country. For like we would take a packed lunch, if you know what I mean, and we'd be gone for the day down the country to find a stream. This, all the streams are all covered up now, but we'd go down catching pinnigans and newts, and depending on the time of the year, frog spawn, and getting the frog spawn and taking it home and watching the frogs hatch, like, you know. So we did all of that stuff. That was pure country for us.
Have you any idea where the name Navi Bank came from?
The Navi Bank is, I think that it came from the workers that were making the river channel wider, and the navvies, as they were called. So the Navi Bank is built from, I won't say rubbish, but you know what I mean, pushed it back into the side. So that's why it's called the Navi Bank. That's what I'm
And I never knew what that was. Yeah. Now, at the moment, of course, it's absolutely beautiful, it's lovely, you know. Yeah. But in your day, there was nothing there, really, only a big heap of dirt, was it?
Yeah, it was a big heap of dirt, but it was, you could walk on it, and it seemed to be covered constantly with, like it was made with coal dust. It was a strange sort of texture on the material as you were walking along it. But it was a great playground for us, I have to tell you, because we'd go down there on our bicycles, and even just if you walk past where the Towers housing estate is now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just there, again, there was a lot of like sand dunes. And we used to love getting them. We thought we were, I think we invented BMX bikes. We thought we were like motorbikes with motocross things. Like, and we'd get our bikes and we'd be riding up and down those hills. You know, there were sand dunes, and playing army, hiding down in behind the hills, playing with one another and shooting and all of that crack. Yeah.
So it must have been one of the best places in Dundalk for, because there were so many open spaces and hidden spaces and everything down the King. Like, we had nothing like that up in Hills. It was the main Dublin Road.
We had nothing, you know. Yeah, we had a great time. We would be literally out of the house at, you know, 9 o'clock or 9:30 during the holidays, and we would go back for lunch. You know, nobody had a watch. I think one of our friends, Brian Mullen, might have had a watch. He might be the only one. We'd go home now and have our dinner. You go home, you have your dinner, and you'd be back out in the street sort of 15 minutes later, and you're back in at 6 o'clock for your tea, and you're back out again until it gets dark. We were never in the house.
You mentioned briefly there the Manny's and football ground, and like what's happened now is the Clancy Park and everything like that. They were great people. The Clancy, wasn't it? Clancy himself, wasn't he?
Yeah, and the O'Mahony's, what again? Like when you're from Quay Street or the Quay, the O'Mahony's, you played for the O'Mahony's, right? And again, with any other GAA parish, if as such. Yeah. Where you were from that area, that was the whole point of the GAA. Yeah. You played local. It was all local. Everybody was beside you. And my dalliance with the O'Mahony's was very brief. Like that, there was obviously training, because they had to decide who was going to be on the team and find out who were the good players. So you turned up for training some night. And one night there was our gang, as it were, it was myself, my cousin Derek, Hazel, Eamon Doyle, and who was the other fellow? Brian Mullen lived down the street, and he was Sage. And so we decided...
What was your name?
I was Doc.
That's how you got your name?
Yeah, I have to tell you, we don't really know how I got the name, but somebody gave it to me, and that was it, like, right? Yeah, yeah. So we went down one night, somebody said, Yeah, well, we go and play football with your man. He's, whose idea was, I don't know. So off we rocked down to the training session, in inverted commas. And the man in charge of it at the time was a legend called Gene McBride.
Yeah, Gene, great man for the stage.
Is that right? Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. Gene was from High Park, and he was in charge of the man. And he seemed to be in charge of all the youth teams, right?
Yeah.
And then we went, and it was like, well, your line literally lined up against the wall, and there's teams picked so that he sees who's playing. But everybody got a game. So, and the rule was boots and togs at 7 o'clock in High Park, outside Connolly's shop in High Park. So you rock up with your boots and your togs, and we went to play football, and you were given the jerseys from the senior team, and they were down to your knees, right? And everybody in those days was stick thin, skinny me length the barber, like, you know? And of course, like, I was swimming on you. But anyway, off we go, and I'm chomping at the bit, waiting to get a game. And about 10 minutes to go, Gene says, right, young Darcy, on you go. So up I go, and everybody's running after the ball. And at one stage, somebody lobs the ball into the opposing team's penalty area. And it's coming in, and me, like a young gazelle on the African plains, leapt up, hit this pug with the meat of me head, sent it into the goal. Now, the minute I hit it, I'm wheeling away with me hand in the air, claiming, thinking I was George Best. I was kilt. Because you're not allowed to head the ball in Gaelic. And nobody told me you weren't allowed to head
the ball.
Is
that still a rule in Gaelic?
I'm not too sure. Have you ever seen anybody head the ball in Gaelic?
Well, I can't, actually.
You can't, actually, yeah. Now, obviously, because it's easier for them to get it with the palm of the hands and slap it into the goal now, or as easy. But
there's no need for them to head it.
There's no need for them to head it. Nobody told me. I was killed. Now, not, in fairness, not by Gene, but by everybody else. And he's, I have to say, he was very good. I remember him saying, leave the lad alone. It's his first time. It's his first time. It's his first time. It was also my last time, because I never went down again.
Now, the key itself, Doctor, and when I say the key, I mean where you were talking about the boats and that coming in. That must have been a great experience as a child, though, seeing the boats
come up and down. We loved it. And if you were very lucky, you were also able to get out with, the pilot.
Oh, the boat that goes out to take
them in. So sometimes if you were really lucky and you got out there when the pilot was there and you could talk your way onto the boat to go out and see the boats coming
and
in.
And you got was, on them,
did you? Oh, a couple of times, yeah. And, you know, living around the quay, as you say, we were fascinated watching the boats coming in. You know, you had the big molasses tank. So there'll be a big molasses boat tanker would come in, and the smell of it would be all over the street.
And what was that?
Molasses, it's like syrup, a big, thick, dark syrup. And we used to sort of put it into the big tanks. Lorries would come, load up molasses, take it away to be refined into syrup or sugar or something like that, you know. So we used to love the molasses boats coming in because of the smell. The coal boats, obviously. There was also the gypsum boats. A big load of gypsum would come in. And
that was wood, was it?
No, the gypsum is kind of like a white chalk stone.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, you did have the wood boats that were coming in with the big, big bales of 2x4s. You know, and they'd be huge. And again, like that, they'd all be stacked up on the harbour. And we used to run, they could be stacked up 30 foot high. And we used to climb up to the top of them and run across the top. And there'd be hidey holes inside. Catching crabs, Harry, we used to do as well. Because the abattoir was right across the road from us.
Oh, yeah.
So we could go over there, get a bit of meat, off cuts of meat, like the bits of fat or whatever, bit of string, and go over and throw the string and the meat off the edge of the pier to catch the crabs.
No, the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
Could you get? Could you go in like we used to go into the pork factory? And if you knew somebody in it,
yeah.
you would get.
You
couldn't do anything.
We
like
didn't
that.
Do anything like that. Again, I don't remember it being beef. I always remember it being horse. So it was horse meat that came in. It was always horses that came in and were slaughtered in there, as far as I can remember now. I don't remember it being cows. And no, nobody ever went over there to get meat, no.
Now, everyone that lives in different parts of the town are very proud of it. And, you know, it's like internationally, if you come from Ireland, you come from France or wherever you be. But the Indon Dock, it's very local, isn't it? Like your Hill Street, mm-hmm. Quay Street, you know,
Pierce Park,
everywhere. I wonder, is that the same everywhere, or is it just in Dundalk?
Well, I can't imagine why it would be different anywhere. I would be kind of thinking, but that it's more that type of sense of belonging. I don't think is as strong as it used to be.
I don't think it is at all anymore.
I don't think it is, because everybody's busy now. We all live in our own little bubble. You get up in the morning, you go to work, you come back to your house. That seems to be all you do. Now, and again, like I'm guilty of it myself. Like, you know, once I got married and was living in Bay Estate, when we were living in Bay Estate, it wasn't so bad. There was that sort of community thing was still there, but we moved into Manly Down Close, and I don't think you've got that in housing estates now. And there's so many housing estates. Like back then, the town was a lot smaller, so it was easier to define where you were from by saying you're from the Quay or you're from Seatown.
Would you ever have gone up by Hill Street, other than passing it to go to Dublin or anything? Did you ever take a spin in your bike up Hill Street or down O'Hanlon Park or in your youth? Or was it strictly Quay Street in the area that you told me?
Yes, strictly in Quay Street. The furthest we might have gone would be maybe Seatown. And the only reason you might have gone to Seatown was for the Seatown patron. In Quay Street, we had the St. Bridget's Community Festival. We had that, and the Seatown patron was on. The furthest that I would have gone then, you were asking about Hill Street, was when I went to secondary school and met up. I went to the Tech in 1973. So then you started to meet people from outside your area. Because when I was in Quay Street, I went to the Christian Brothers. So you're only talking about people that are living in Seatown or from Quay Street went to the Christian Brothers. You'll find that that's kind of, because it's anywhere that sort of side of the town. When I went up there, then I met a couple of fellas who were at the Friary. And of course, the Friary Youth Club was the big thing.
Yes.
So on Friday nights, I went up to the Friary Youth Club.
So that was as far as
that was as far as I went, yeah. Because again, we had our gang. So I had all my cousins beside me, right, and we would go over to St. Helena Park, or we would go to the harbour. We would be playing football on the Tower Road. We'd be playing football in the hatchery. We'd be playing football down the big lane. We would be going down to the army barracks, or as I say, down the Red Barn Road to the country away for the day, away to the Navy Bank, going into the old factories. Eventually, we found a way to get making holes in the roof to get into the old factories. It was a great place and a huge adventure playground for us when we were growing up. And as well as that, all your... if your mother had any friends, they were all part of your family. So it was that big, huge family thing that I think it's... I like to think that it's only in Ireland that you get that sense of community and helpfulness around you. Extended
and
family.
Quay Street had that.
Oh, Quay Street had that.
I wish we had the same freedom. We had good freedom, but well, nothing had, at all like what you had, you know.
But it's not only that. It's funny, I did mention earlier about sort of Pinnegans and Newts and stuff like that. And I know times change, But you kind of think that, again, children today, they don't know the joy of going along and finding a shock, or somebody falling into a shock, or saying we're going to be killed, or getting the frog spawn and taking it home, or catching bees, catching wasps, catching butterflies. None of that stuff goes on anymore, because to do it, you have to go somewhere to do it. Where back in our day, it was on our doorstep.
David, thank you very much indeed.
Listen to lots more epic interviews at gatheringheritage.com.